So in the last class, we discussed the effect of this K-space magnetic field. We demonstrate that in a semiconductor, as a particle move around in the energy band, we may have some kind of K-space magnetic field. This K-space magnetic field is coming from some kind of like a Barry space. It's because in a band, we can view electron as if it have some internal degree of freedom, like a spin. As the momentum changes, this spin actually rotates because the spin is locked to the momentum in a certain way. And certainly in a band, we don't really have a spin. This spin really means that when you have a many side per unit cell, what is the weight of a wave function on a different side on the unit cell? So this different distribution of the weight gave you some kind of something like an internal degree of freedom, like a spin. However, this internal degree of freedom always locked with momentum. As the k moves, internal degree of freedom move around. So this internal degree of freedom is described by some kind of a wave function, you know, psi 1, psi 2, some column vector. Okay. And then we can have this, then using this k dependence of this internal degree of freedom, we can construct so-called vector potential in the k space using this formula. So I will come back to this. Then using this vector potential, we can do this anti-symmetric derivation to obtain so-called k space magnetic field. Just like in real space, we have similar formulas in real space, but here we do everything in k space. So the derivative is respect to k, not respect to x. Then we get a k-space magnetic field. So in general, we have this k-space magnetic field. That would influence the motion of a particle. And in the last class, we did a three-dimensional version of the theory. If you do a two-dimensional version of theory, we have a similar thing. And then we have this, interesting formula that even when you have a field band, we can still have so-called Hall conductance, even without applying magnetic field. So under proper situation, if this integration of this curvature, actually in two dimension, let me do this. In two dimension, we just have only one choice, x, y. Because x, x, y, y equal to zero, so only non-zero things, x, y, so we only one component, so this is easy. So, and if this integration is not equal to zero, and then we have some kind of a Hall conductance. Okay, so that is basically the results. So the even field band can have a Hall conductance. Then you say, is this an insulator or metal? Because we say that if an energy band is totally filled, electron cannot move. If you apply the electron, nothing can happen. So this is a little bit strange. You know, how come we have a Hall conductance? And so actually, what really happens is that this first, let me try to say, we have energy conservation. Because if you apply electric field, electron move in the direction of electric field, you do some work. When you do some work, that means you transfer some energy to the system. And when you have a field band, electron cannot gain any energy because the band is totally filled. It cannot do anything. So there's no way for the electric field to inject energy into the system. So actually, that's why we believe when you apply electric field, there's no induced current. Because once you have induced current, you do work, you start to transfer energy into system, but the system cannot accept any energy because the energy band is filled. But however, here, in our argument, there's a loophole. If induced electric field is perpendicular, if induced current is perpendicular to the electric field, you do not do any work, actually. So actually, in this situation, you can apply electric field, induce transverse current without injecting any currents, energy, into the ground states, into this system. So that seems okay. So how to understand this induced transverse current, even when the band is totally filled? You're supposed to have an insulator. So from energy point of view, it seems okay. Energy argument allow these transverse currents. But what really happens is that we have this, let me just say that in words. What really happens is that when you have an electric field, the currents of the ground state is changed. And you know, what is the current of a field band? You know, it's really something like usually the current is at is sum of velocity. You can see every particle have a velocity. If a sum of velocity of each particle, and if total velocity is not zero, then you have some currents. But however, if a velocity is the derivative of a function, then you can show that for the field band, the sum velocity is always equal to zero. So that's the ground states have zero currents, basically. But however, when you have a d, then this velocity receive a correction. This is a force. So this force actually is E times electric field. So if electric is not equal to zero, the velocity, the definition velocity changed. You receive this actual term. And for the field band, for this ground state, this sum of the actual term is not equal to zero. So this is a source of this transverse current. So basically what happens is that you have a ground state wave function. When you apply electric field, this wave function deformed a little bit. But deformed wave function as a ground state actually carry currents. So we have a very strange situation. The ground state of a system can carry non-zero currents. And this is a Hall conductance we're talking about. Because the ground state carry currents, certainly the energy do not change. So therefore, the electric field and the currents always perpendicular. There is no injection of energy into the system. The ground state remain to be ground state. It just carry currents. Okay. And this current is very similar to the current in a superconducting ring. You can see when you have a superconducting ring, we say, okay, we may have a circulating current without decay. And here I want to say the following. This current is very similar because when you have a flux through the hole, the ground state of the ring have a current. It's a ground state current. It's not something moving give you a current. It's just ground state have this current. Certainly the total current actually is equal to the ground state current plus the current due to excitation. The current due to excitation can dissipate, you know, have scattering, you know, have friction, you know. This is the current we usually talk about. We usually assume ground state have zero currents. But in a superconducting ring, actually, the ground state have a current. So when all the excitation dies away, you have a ground state which have a current and which flowing forever. It's very mysterious if you think some excitation have a current which can keep going forever. That's very difficult to imagine. It has a ground state have a current. So therefore, this transverse current induced by electric field in this kind of particular band is very similar to the superconducting currents, which is a current in the ground states. Even without any excitation, we can have some current. So that is of this nature. And this current also always do not induce any energy. There is no energy transfer. Okay, so that's the first point. And the second point is that this quantity actually is quantized as 2 pi times integer. You know, I try to explain why. Okay, why this like 2 pi times integer. Okay, so first we have to understand what the C really means. Remember, this C really means the following. Suppose we compare the phase of the states at a different k. So we say, okay, if we compare the two vector at different k, and you know, these two vectors are slightly different. So we say that actually there may be a small phase here. But this small phase, actually this delta phi, actually is equal to this this vector potential ci times delta ki. So this is how we define it. You know, this kind of vector potential in K space have a more physical interpretation. It's actually produce the phase difference when you compare two nearby states. What their phase difference? Their phase difference actually is this vector times a shift of a k, and that gave you the phase difference. So that is precisely this meaning. Then what does D means? The D means the following. So we have a dxy, sorry, and we multiply this delta kx, delta ky, and this quantity also have a very geometrical meaning. Okay, it's like a curl. The curl is falling. So let's consider this this square delta kx, delta ky. Okay. Then we say that from here to here there's a phase difference. There's like a delta phi 1. So let me just write it. There's a delta phi 1. And here to here you have a delta phi 2. And here you have a delta phi 3. You have a delta phi 4. Okay. You try to compare those phases. Go through a small loop. And you say, actually, when you go through loop, this phase, the total phase difference should be more or less zero because of falling. You can see from here to here you have phase difference. Compare these two states, you have phase difference. But compared to these two states, you have almost the same phase difference, but in the opposite direction. You know, you compare them in the opposite way. So these two phases almost have opposite sign. They almost cancel each other. And these two phases almost cancel each other. But not quite, just slightly different, because this phase difference here, this phase difference here, so they're a different place, they don't quite cancel each other. So there, because they don't quite cancel each other, so when you go through this small loop, compare all these phase difference, then this total phase difference is exactly this quantity. And this curl actually is really, you know, this derivative really try to compare. So this is a phase difference. And this, say, in x direction. And this derivative in y direction, they try to compare the phase difference of a difference of phase difference in y direction. So that's a physical meaning. So therefore, this integration have this meaning that if it goes through a small loop, the total phase difference you'll get is this. Okay. So this is very important. So with this understanding, we can understand what is suppose we integrate over this dxy in some area. What this really means? Okay. So actually, this integration means the total phase difference around the loop. We're just using Stokes' theorem. Suppose we start from here. We have phase difference delta phi 1, delta phi 2, and etc. Delta phi 3, and etc. We go through this loop. Okay. We ask, what is the total phase difference? And this can be obtained by saying, let's go through a small loop. We go through this small loop, go through this small loop. But all these internal loops have a shared edge. They all cancel each other. You can show that the sum over all the phase difference around the small loop became the total phase difference or cumulative phase you'll get around the boundary of the whole disk. Okay. So therefore, this is a phase difference. Let me just note it. This phase difference go around the whole loop. It go around the whole loop, we get a phase difference, and this equal to this. So this is a remarkable, because we want to compute the phase difference around the loop. And one way to do so is that we extend the loop into a disk, then integrate this integrate d on this. So actually, this phase difference on loop actually is equal to this loop integral of dk times c, this phase space vector field. If you integrate this vector field around loop, you get total accumulated the phase difference. And this phase difference, this loop integral along the edge, can be expressed as a surface integral on the disk. And these two are the same. And using this result, I can show that this one is quantized. Because suppose, let's consider on the sphere. Suppose our K space is a sphere, S2. Okay. Let's pretend that. Then we can consider an integration of this this vector around the loop. Try to compute the total accumulated phase around this small loop. Then we can do this using Stokes theorem. We can extend this loop into the disk and do the integration over d on this disk and obtain this curl, this circular integral. But on the sphere, we have another way to extend this loop into the disk by going outside. So we can integrate outside and to get the same results. Then here is a thing. The two results should agree because they compute the same phase. And the two results agree if there's a sign difference. If the integration inside and the integration outside, they add up to zero, then that's what we agree. But there's another choice they agree. If they add up to 2 pi, they also agree. Because total phase accumulation of 2 pi is the same as nothing. So therefore, so because of this, this quantity has to be 2 pi times integer. Otherwise, we cannot interpret this integration of d on disk as total accumulated phase around the edge. But from definition for d, this such a d indeed have such interpretation. The integration of d on the disk is a total accumulated phase around the boundary of a disk. This is geometrical meaning or geometrical meaning of this d. Because d has this geometrical meaning. So therefore, their integration on any closed surface has to be quantized as 2 pi times integer. So that is so this is actually the mathematician, the Chen, got this result, but you certainly use a different language. And we get quantized. And so this quantization of d is quite significant, because it means that we have a different insulator. Remember that if energy band is totally filled, then we get something like insulator. Okay. And but usually when we say insulator, okay, usually just insulator. But now the insulator became rich because we can have a different kind of insulator. Because some insulator, this integration is a zero. Other is not zero. Yes?
Sorry, it's not clear for me the argument that you make here with the sphere. I know that the two phases must add up to an integer multiple of 2 pi.
Yes.
Why does that imply that the phase itself has to be an integer?
No, phase is not integer. This total phase is a 2 pi. Okay, let me go through. I'm a little bit quick here. So basically, this integration of the D inside and the integration of D outside should equal up to 2 pi. Yeah. In order for this picture to be consistent. Okay. But if D inside and this integration D outside, they are equal up to 2 pi, what do you mean by their sum is a quantized? But actually, what happens is that this total integration of D is not the sum of the contribution from inside and outside. It's a difference from contribution from inside and outside. There's a strange thing about orientation. Because I think there's a right hand, because here the edge go like this. Okay. So when you do the D, the surface time orientation going pointing outside the sphere. And when you're using, if you're using the integration outside to represent this curl, they have different rule. So actually, you have to assume this orientation of surface have arrow go into the square. And this kind of integration, their sum has to be, these two integration has to be equal up to 2 pi. But however, in this case, the orientation for the outside is different. The both inside outside, which assume the same orientation. And so there's a sign change. So before these two integration are equal up to 2 pi, and when you take a sign change, that means so this quantity actually is a difference of the contribution from inside and outside, in if you have opposite orientation. And because if inside and outside have opposite orientation, their contribution is a same up to 2 pi, then their difference will be multiple of 2 pi. Yeah. So there's a slight change of orientation. But at the end, we got this result, 2 pi times integer. Okay. And then I want to emphasize that this quantity is a property of the band. It's a property how this wave function changes as k shifts. So once you have a band, for every band, you can compute D. You can do this integral. For every band, you can assign this number. You can trend number. So this band may have a trend number equal to 1. And the next band may have a trend number equal to minus 1, and etc. OK, so you have this. For each band, you can assign a trend number. OK. And when you fill that particular band with different trend number, you get an insulator. But you get different kind of insulator. And those insulators would have a different Hall conductance. So that's what we call the chain insulator. It's coming from some kind of topological property. And so you may say, okay, this should be called this topological insulator, but this is not topological insulator. This is chain insulator. The topological insulator describes something different. And so actually, the chain insulator is more topological. In the following sense, so let me just make some comment. You know, what do you mean by different insulator? So what do you mean by different insulator? So different insulator really means the following: is that suppose we have this we have a Hamiltonian H1, then it's a chain insulator with a C equal to 1. Okay, that means a band with a chain number 1 is a field. And then we have another different system where this the band is filled have chain number 2, so it's a chain is equal to 2. So the question is that can we deform this H1 into H2 without phase transition? So basically, it's that can we change the chain number band continuously in some way? And we say we cannot because this is quantized. But actually we can. You need to pay a price. So actually, Chern number can change. If when you do the deformation, this two band, you know, this two band getting closer and closer, and they touch. When they touch, then the states here will be get mixed. Okay. And then if these two bands have different Chern number, then the Chern number may get mixed. Okay. If you continue to deform the Hamiltonian, if the energy gap open up again, when they open up again, it's not guaranteed that the Chern number of the two bands remain to be the same. They may change. Actually, they may both change. This may change to zero, this may change to zero. The total Chern number of two bands is not changed. But they may, like Chern number can transfer from one band to another band when the two bands touch and mix. But when two bands touch, that represents the phase transition. Because before, this ground state have energy gap. Because if band have energy gap, if the first lower band is totally filled, to create any excitation, you have to move an electron from lower band to upper band. And you have to cause energy delta. So this is a particular state we call the state with energy gap, very rigid states. They don't do anything. But however, if you deform your Hamiltonian, you close energy gap, then things can happen. Then Chern number can mix and transfer. And when the gap reopens again, what left behind as a ground state may become another type. Okay. So the point is that from here to here, it can happen, but however, it's through a phase transition. So this is a gap. And this also gapped. But there's a gapless point in between, and that means phase transition. So this really became a picture that the Chern insulator with different Chern number belong to different phase. And to go from one phase to another phase, you have to go through this gapless point, and that is a phase transition point. And so that's why it's very interesting. Yes.
What if instead you just like tune the chemical potential so that a higher band gets filled, and you just add the new Chern number to the band?
And that's also gapless because when you change the chemical potential, if chemical potential between this gap is a gap, the ground state gap. Once chemical potential reach here, this band start to fill, you create a small Fermi pocket here. And this small Fermi pocket would have a gapless excitation. And if you bring chemical potential back down again, Fermi pocket disappear, it becomes gapped again. So if that process corresponds to the falling, you have a transition, but you have a window, which is gapless. Yeah. But there is no way to go from here to here without closing gap. If you don't close gap, it will be smooth change. That would be smooth change. If you don't close gap, these two Chern numbers do not change. So you cannot do that. But however, yes. Yeah.
So I'm just wondering why the total Chern number is remain the same.
Okay. Yeah, the total Chern number is the same. How do I understand this? It's kind of like let me do it this way. Suppose we fill two band. Okay, I'm giving a physical argument. If you fill two band, okay, then you have a Hall conductance, which is contribution from both band. So actually, this Hall conductance is given by the sum of the two-turn number. Okay. Now you do this. You try to mix these two field band. But when you mix two field band, this empty band and the field band still have a gap. So the energy gap actually do not close. Energy gap do not close. We will try to mix this. And if energy gap do not close, this Hall conductance cannot change. Yeah. And so this is why we say, if you mix these two bands and reopen them again, the Chern number may distribute differently, but total Chern number is the same because this gap do not close. To change the total Chern number below the energy level, you have to close this energy gap at this energy level. But I didn't give you an explanation, I just give you a plausible reasoning. And you can prove this, but this is not what I'm going to do here. And but I will make comment is that my following comment will be related to your question, is that actually this picture is not rigorous, or not even proper, because this is a free electron picture. We say that if you do not turn on interaction, there's no way to go from here to here, because we're using this free electron energy band to obtain this picture. So there's a much more profound question. If you allow interaction, can you go around in some higher dimensional parameter space with turn interaction and go back to the free, and then without closing gap and change this Chern number? So the answer is no. So that argument is really says that as long as you do not close energy gap, even when you turn into action, this Chern number is topological. But not in this expression. When you have interaction, this expression no longer valid. This expression really is for free electron. But the Chern number itself, or sorry, Hall conductance itself, is more robust than the free electron picture. Even interaction, when the free electron became invalid, this Hall conductance is still there and still quantized. So this requires understanding why Hall conductance is quantized for interacting system. So you cannot understand that using free electron picture. So this will be kind of very different situation. Yeah, maybe in the more advanced class, when you do many body theory, you may encounter this issue. Yes.
I'm a little bit confused where you went to the Born-Mann Hamiltonian to another. So the Chern number is a topological invariant, right?
It's topological invariant for the free electron system because the concept of associated with energy band. Energy band is concept of a free electron system. So therefore, within the one free electron picture applies, you can have energy band, and you can define Chern number. When you have an interacting system, you don't even have an energy band. The whole picture is different. Everything's destroyed. We don't have a Psi, we have nothing. There's nothing there. So therefore, one has to understand the interacting Chern number. So in interacting system, we don't have Chern number, but we can have Hall conductance. You have to directly understand why Hall conductance is quantized. So for interacting system, we don't even talk about the Chern number, but we talk about Hall conductance. But at the end, there is a Chern number pop up for the different reason. Yeah.
However, so when talking about the electron picture, can I have different Chern numbers, and those different Chern numbers would correspond to what?
Different Chern number correspond to different phase of matter, because when you fill that band with different Chern number, then you have different Chern insulator. And at least here we show that if you do not turn on interaction, those different Chern insulator cannot be connected. You know, I just say without turn on within the free electron picture, the only way for Chern number to change is to close energy gap within free electron system. And here I want to make a claim that This is much more robust than that. Actually, even for interacting system, as long as you do not close energy gap, this Hall conductance, it remain quantized. So therefore, those free electron system with different Chern number cannot be connected even if you turn on interactions. To prove that one use a different picture.
Just to get a little bit of insight on that, when you calculate the Chern number, in this case, the Chern number of the K space, right?
Yes.
So what you're saying is basically that there's no way that I can change the topology of your K space by switching on interaction.
No, it's not that. Since you asked this question, let me explain. So first, I want to say that once you turn interaction, there's no K space. There is no Brillouin zone because of the point is that the wave function is complicated. You cannot using this single particle filling energy picture to understand the ground states. So the whole picture breaks down. To understand this Hall conductance. So why Hall conductance quantize? What one consider is one put our system on the torus. You know, put your whole system on the torus. That's your ground states. Then what you do is that you try to insert electric flux. Here you have a phi one, and here you have a phi two. Not electric, magnetic flux. You try to insert magnetic flux in these two holes of the torus. Okay. So then what you find is that the total ground state, this many body ground state wave function, became a function of a phi one and a phi two. If you have different flux, the wave function changes slightly. Okay. So now here I'm going to fly. First we notice that phi one, phi two, live on the torus, another torus, because the phi one, phi two, if you have zero flux and two pi flux, the same thing. So therefore, this function is a periodic function of a phi one with a period of a zero and a two pi, and also periodic function of phi two with a period of zero and a two pi. Okay. So therefore, we can view this. Now I'm flying. This wave function as a fiber bundle on the space parameterized by phi one, phi two. You know, basically it's that on every phi one, phi two, I have a particular ground state, like I have fiber. And here we have another ground state, many body ground state, another fiber. And then because ground state is a one-dimensional vector in some big Hilbert space. And as you move around this ground state may change in this. So this became so-called a fiber bundle on the torus. And then that's what the chains work. They say, how many different kind of fiber bundle can you have? You know, describe this twist. Actually, you can define similar twists. Let's call this a C tilde I using this many body ground state wave function. Phi one, phi two. But now you do d phi I, phi one, phi two. Okay, so I'm changing my notation. Okay. You can define some kind of vector potential, but in this phi one, phi two space using similar idea, this Barrier space. And then under this Barrier space may have a quantized curvature of magnetic flux. But in the phi one, phi two space, and that one should be quantized. You can show this one is a quantized if energy gap of many body wave function do not close. Yeah, so this gave you a many body way to prove this quantity is a topological. But this topological really means that against any perturbation to the Hamiltonian, you can change the hopping. You can change interaction. No matter what you do, as long as you don't close energy gap, this Hall conductance is quantized. So very robust. So this is amazing. So this is a So this is really the essence of a quantum Hall effect. Because it's a many body Chern number. So this band is a single body Chern number. It's a Chern number coming from the twist of this like 2x2, the two column vector if you have two band picture. But now we create a twist using phi1 phi2 of a magnetic flux on a torus. Using the many body wave function, we can do a similar twist. And then we get a similar Chern number, but in this many body sense. And it turns out that this many body Chern number is exactly the Hall conductance, the measure of Hall conductance physically. Yeah. So this is how we understand it. And then there's even more surprise here. You can see when we do this, I can turn interaction, but I keep one thing. I keep the conservation of a particle. The particle number conserved. So the currents can be defined. So we can have a Hall conductance. So here it looks like these two states are different if you have U1 symmetry. And because we are using the Hall conductance to characterize it, we need the U1 symmetry. We need this particle number conservation. So therefore, what I said is not that topological in the sense if you add all kind of perturbation without breaking U1 symmetry, then these two are different. So now I want to ask, if you add a perturbation which even break the U1 symmetry, the particle number is not conserved anymore. Is these two states still the same or different? And this became very interesting issue because we can no longer use Hall conductance. There's no Hall conductance to use because the U1 symmetry is not even conserved. You cannot define currents. And then I claim that even without U1 symmetry, these two still are different. But the argument for that would be much more difficult. And but I just want to say one thing, and I won't go into that, is that this kind of quantum Hall state, when consider quantum Hall states, or this Chern insulator, let's call the Chern insulator. When consider Chern insulator on the disk, there is a gapless edge excitation. There's a gapless edge excitation. And this gapless edge excitation survives interaction, perturbation, even the perturbation which break U1 symmetry. And so this is a robust feature of this Chern insulator. Their gapless edge excitation survive any perturbation, even the perturbation which break U1 symmetry. So when you break U1 symmetry, we have to tell whether this state is trivial or non-trivial to see whether you have a gapless edge excitation or not. Then you may ask, why we have such robust gapless edge which survive any perturbation? We cannot destroy them. Indestructible edge, gapless edge excitation. And the reason is that this is very recent work, is that this gapless edge excitation have something so-called gravitational anomaly. So it's have a gravitational anomaly because of that reason, so it cannot destroy it. So therefore, that's another way to look at this whole topological state. So this is one example of topological states. That in the bulk, you have energy gap. Nothing happens at low energy. But the boundary of topological states have some interesting feature. They are usually anomalous. They are always anomalous. It's almost definition. The topologicalness in the bulk implied anomalousness on the edge. So that's a different way. So now we have a new, so by understanding the topological property of the bulk, we have a new way to understand anomaly. So the topological states, the boundary of topological states always have some anomalies. And this anomaly is direct reflection of something non-trivial happening in the bulk. So this is the simplest example this happened. And this one have a topological anomaly because for those who may know it, is that this edge state is a chiral fermion. The fermion always move in one direction, only move in one direction, not the other direction. And this kind of fermion is known to be anomalous. And if later you encounter something like a gravitational anomaly, some simple example in 1+1 dimension, you will see this example. And this quantum Hall, this chain insulator would have this anomalous edge. And this, because this anomalous edge make this edge indestructible. Unless you make a change of the bulk, only when the bulk have a phase transition, this gapless edge can disappear. So this gapless edge is protected by the whole bulk feature. So that is a picture. Okay, so this is basically is some kind of a physical discussion of this very interesting state. Any questions? Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, back to the simple example. When the gap closes, the churn number comes from all the little phase differences.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is when the gap closes, one guy could flip over to the other gap, switch its phase, and then go back.
Yes. The thing that this, thank you much for this picture, for this question. Okay. So you can see here, you know, as a changing K, this internal phi just twisting around. And then, but on the top band, they're also twisting around, but actually in the opposite direction. You know, suppose we only have two band. So this vector is a two component vector. So actually, this if for the fixed K, these two directions form orthogonal basis. In this really eigenstate of this MK matrix we derived. So they are orthogonal basis. And these two vectors are orthogonal. So if using spin, it means if using the spin analog, means the spin in the lower band always opposite to the spin in the upper band. And then we know that this geometric phase can be using spin language, can be when the spin twisting around on the sphere. The tip of spin enclose a disk, and the solid angle of this disk happened to be the accumulated phase of twisting this spin. Now you can see that the lower band spin twisting one direction will go around a small k loop. But for the same small k loop, for the upper band, the spin is opposite. The spin would twist in the opposite direction. So if you add these two contributions from these two, they actually cancel. So when they mix together, and that's why the total contribution equals zero. Means if you consider contribution for both of them, there's no contribution. So no matter how you mix them, they just always equal to zero. But only when you try to separate these two, you make a non-zero contribution. But how you separate them depend on how you open up gap here. So this is really became a way to produce this topological chain insulator is that you can start with a graphene, have a Dirac fermion. And here, that's like a critical point. Then you can add a little bit of perturbation to the hopping to try to open up a gap here, try to gap this Dirac point. Yeah. Then you try to resolve these two. But the different way to resolve this, you can get different chain number. And so here, by doing perturbation, you can go from one state to another state. But these two states are separated by this Dirac point. So you can imagine you have a state, we have band with a chain number one. It's very close to Dirac point like this. And then you close the gap, you get Dirac point. When the gap reopen again, after reopen, you maybe reopen in a different way. Then after reopening the gap, the chain number in the lower band may change. But all the changes happen near the Dirac point. So by studying the neighborhood Dirac point, you can understand how chain number changes around. So that's a very nice trick. Without doing this band structure calculation, that's too tedious. Okay. So here we just describe some physics of this chain insulator, and let me make some comment how to make it So I already described how to make it by consider this starting from direct point and try to open that gap in different way. And here I want to describe another way you can see why you have trained number or not trained number. Remember, let's consider 2x2 matrix. Remember that if you have like a graphene, you already studied. In a graphene, we have a 2 sides per unit cell. Then when you calculate band structure of this graphene, you at the end you obtain 2x2 matrix, which is a function of k. And then for every k points, this 2x2 matrix gave you 2 eigenvalues. Okay. Then for different k points, you have different eigenvalues, so they may get 2 curves. We will diagonalize this 2x2 matrix for every k point, you get 2 curves, you get 2 band. And so that's like the 2-band picture. So now I want to ask a question. How do you know whether the lower band have a trend number equal to 1 or not? How do you compute the trend number of the lower band? Certainly it's determined by this 2x2 matrix as a function of k. If you know this, you know that. But how to see the connection? Well, there's a simple way to see the connection. In that, for 2x2 matrix, we can always expand as something like some kind of a C0, like identity, let me call it N0, some identity operator, and this Ni and the Pauli matrix. Okay, we can always expand like this. Okay. And so if you have an energy gap, then that means that okay. Now here I want to say, suppose N0 is constant. Let's suppose N0 is constant. If N0 is constant, this just adds a total energy shift. Okay. And then the eigenvalue of this matrix is very simple. It's just it's a plus or minus absolute value of this N vector. So this Ni form a vector, 3-component vector. So if it's constant, so this is a constant, then the eigenvalue of this combination is just plus or minus of this N vector. Okay. So if this Ni vector is non-zero, we have 2 bands which are always separate. Okay. Then with this picture, we can immediately obtain to obtain trend number by saying that, you know, what is this N vector as a function of k? What is this? This actually is a mapping from a torus, which is a k space. You know, Boolean zone k space in 2D. I'm doing 2D case now. In 2D, it's actually a torus. But this N vector is a point in a 3D space. That's N vector. But we require energy gap. That means this absolute value N vector is not equal to 0. So that means this N vector never equal to 0. So this the origin is a whole. It's never 0. Then we have our interesting situation. You know, whether this torus would wrap around this point or not. You know, one mapping is that this torus through this mapping became a torus like this here in the 3D N space. You can see this one just do not wrap around the 1. Okay. Then you can imagine that this torus may map into something like a sphere, which you wrap around the 1, then with a handle. Okay, let me draw the sphere first, then I draw the handle. Your torus is a sphere plus a handle. Okay. You can imagine this torus map into a sphere with a handle. And this sphere wrap around this 1. So that's like a winding number, a wrapping number. So when this torus have this non-zero wrapping number, then that's when you have a non-zero trend number. If you wrap around the once, trend number equals 1. If you wrap around the twice, trend number equals 2. So you have very direct relation. Okay. So this is how we see once we get this 2x2 matrix, then we can see whether the lower band have a chain number or not. Let's consider this this wrapping. Yes. Yes.
All right. So we're trying to describe only the bulk of the sample, or what happens in the bulk.
Yes.
So in order to do that, I can choose different types of boundary conditions, right, or different types of geometries. In this case, you choose the torus, and it's very convenient because in here you have non-zero chain numbers. But
so in order to obtain the Brillouin zone in the K space, the real space sample need to have a periodic boundary condition so that the K is well defined the quantum number. Yes. And so I'm sorry, there's many torus here. So first we have the real space is torus, so K is well defined. And then that's led to the Brillouin zone in K space. And K space also a torus, Brillouin zone also a torus. And so here I'm describing this Brillouin zone torus. How they map into the N space. N space is describing this 2x2 matrix. And whether you have a wrapping number or not. Right. So from here, you can directly see.
Okay. However, if I don't choose periodic boundary conditions in the real space,
we don't even have a Brillouin zone. So whole thing breaks down.
Okay.
And actually, that's very suggestive. It means something bad happens. So what happens is that you can see when you have a periodic boundary condition in the real space, you have a band, which have a gap. When you have an open boundary condition in real space, there's a gapless boundary states. Actually, there's something in the gap which live on the boundary. So I think the next week you'll hear this. I will not talk about edge states. I've already talked a little bit, but so for the this is a really strange insulator. For the closed space, there's full gap. When you have a boundary, you have a gapless edge state on the boundary, which is indestructible. And but certainly when you have a boundary, this whole picture breaks down. You don't have Brillouin zone on K space, you know, it's hard to say what is this. And so that's a thing. Okay. So this is how we see how we compute the chain number. But certainly if you don't see that, you can always compute the CI and do the integration numerically. Yes?
Yeah. And what if we have M as a 3x3 matrix?
Yeah. If
you think about some vectors that have a sphere?
Yeah. So if N is a 3x3 matrix, then things are different. So I don't want to talk about this because of the it's a okay. I can talk about that the following way. Then I have to use this. But certainly this picture no longer works. Yeah, and but the C can still defined. And yeah, I don't have a good picture. If N is a 3x3 matrix, there's one way to say the following. So we have three band. Okay, we fill the lower band, and so you can. Yeah, this picture may not always work. What I try to say, sometimes you may just isolate these two lower band, and pretend it's 2x2. But sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work, and this works only if the top band have a chain number to 0. Then you can construct this lower band. But sometimes top band have chain number 1, and middle band have chain number 0. Then you have to concentrate these two bands to see this picture. But in general, for 3x3, it's more complicated. I don't have this simple picture anymore. Yes, you have a question?
Actually, I have
an answer. I see. Yeah, but yeah, unfortunately, for 3x3 matrix, we don't have a simple picture. Let me put it this way. Okay. So now let's try to using the remaining maybe 20 minutes. So let's try to see, to have a more general theory of this. Basically, the theory we described actually works for two dimension. So can we have something for any dimension, like a 3 dimension or 4 dimension, you know? So what's going on? And so what I'm going to describe actually is a K theory developed by Kitev. which kind of classify this chain insulator and also many other insulator like topological insulator. And so certainly I will only introduce case theory for the case of a chain insulator. I will not talk about topological insulator. However, using this chain insulator as an example, you can understand some flavor of the argument, you know, how a different way of thinking. The way of thinking is very different from this band picture. You know, it's very different from this picture. It's totally different way of thinking. So let's start with d equal to zero. Zero dimension. That's very, very simple. In the zero dimension, what is the insulator? Here by insulator, I mean something with energy gap. So as long as you have energy gap, then you feel the lower energy level, you get insulator. So insulator means something with energy gap, you just feel anything below the gap. So that's the insulator. Then when d equal to zero, then we ask, how many different insulators do we have in d equal to zero? Okay, what is that question? Okay, so let's think about it. So let's consider two-level system. Even simpler, we have two level, just two energy level. Then we say, how many insulator do we have when you have a two-level system with a spinless fermion? You say, okay, maybe we have a three. So why we have three? So the first insulator is a state where we have no fermion, or that insulator. Or we have the first one is occupied. Well, there's energy gap here, so that's another insulator. The third insulator we have is the two band both filled. So we have a three insulator, okay, for two level. Then suddenly I say, okay, how many insulators do we have for three level? Then for three level, we have if you do the similar counting, you have a four. When you have an n level, you have n plus one insulator. Okay. Just different way to fill this level. Okay. And that's pretty simple. And amazingly, that's okay. So therefore, in the zero dimension, the insulator is classified by how many level are filled below the chemical potential. And because Pauli number is conserved, when you're doing deformation, this number for level field or number of particles is always fixed, it's conserved, you cannot change them. So naturally, it's labeled by this integer n, it's a number for field level. So therefore, for d equal to zero, we have many insulators, and it's classified by n which belong to this integer set. So that's a very simple picture. Okay. And this is a thing we want to think about. In higher dimension, we should think about similar thing. Is that suppose in higher dimension we have some kind of Hamiltonian, a very messy Hamiltonian. But we know that this Hamiltonian gave us many energy levels, but there is a gap. We want to fill this energy gap below the gap. And then we consider whether two such Hamiltonian can deform into each other or not without closing gap. If they can continue deforming each other without closing gap, these two insulators belong to the same class. If not, they belong to a different class. So how many class do we have? So really this kind of thinking. So now let's do this kind of thinking in zero dimension. Let's see what we get. So in the zero dimension, what is the canonical form of the Hamiltonian which have energy gap? Well, suppose let's consider a zero-dimensional Hamiltonian which have many energy levels and also have a gap here. Want to fill this. Okay. So we can see that without losing generality, we can deform all the energy level below the gap into minus 1, only the analog above the gap into plus 1. You can massage the Hamiltonian to do the deformation. And this anti-gap never close, we still belong to the same class. Because here we only interested in the class. So without hurting anything, we can assume we can collapse all the level into minus 1, plus 1. So then, and then we say, how many Hamiltonian whose ideal value is plus 1, minus 1 of this type? How to classify this kind of Hamiltonian? How they connected or not connected? Well, in this case, it's simpler. Well, the Hamiltonian will be equal to this. I is the L by L matrix, and the minus I is M by M matrix. Well, the Hamiltonian of this type certainly have this kind of spectrum. But in general, the Hamiltonian can be more general to have this spectrum. More generally, we can put this L plus M by L plus M unitary matrix. We can do this rotation. Okay. We can just rotate them. We'll do unitary rotation. This Hamiltonian remain to be Hermitian, but however, eigenvalue remain to be plus or minus 1. Okay. And this is the key. Actually, this is the key. So here we want to construct the space of a Hamiltonian which have a gap. We just say, what is the most general space of a Hamiltonian with a gap? And we ask whether this space is connected or not connected. If the space have a different disconnected component, then this gap Hamiltonian cannot be deformed into that gap Hamiltonian, though they belong to a different phase. So we have a different class. However, if the space is connected, that means that every gap Hamiltonian can be smoothly deformed to every other gap Hamiltonian. Then that means we only have one phase, one class. So literally, this is this line of thinking. And this is the way we construct space. And so we assume Hamiltonian have eigenvalue plus 1, minus 1. And then any Hamiltonian with this property would have this form. OK. So therefore, the space of a Hamiltonian, let's call the C0 in some way, is labeled by really U. Let me call this S, sorry, U L plus M. It's described by this matrix. And for every matrix, we get a Hamiltonian. And that's one point. So the whole space Hamiltonian with energy gap is given by this space of a unitary matrix. That's nice. But this is not quite correct, actually. Because if this unitary matrix is a block, have this L by L block, then this unitary will apply to this, just don't do anything. So therefore, this one is not one-to-one label. You know, many different unitary matrices actually label the same Hamiltonian. So it's a bad label. So let's remove redundancy of labeling. So if these unitary matrix differ by this unitary matrix of L by L block, Hamiltonian don't change. And that redundant label, so I have to mold out. It's U L by L, describing this upper block. Similarly, there's a redundancy due to the lower block. You have M by M unitary matrix. Also have redundancy, so we have to mold out the U M by M. Okay, so this is a space. This is a space. So this is a space of the Hamiltonian, which have this which have a gap. Okay, and this space is in the mathematics there's some very nice name for this space. I want to say that this space is connected, actually. They are totally connected. Everything connects to every other point. So therefore, there is only one class of Hamiltonian with energy gap. Looks like a trivial. Except that here we made an assumption. We assume there is a L plus eigenvalue, M minus eigenvalue. We made this assumption. And this transformation cannot change this fact. So what we construct is just one component of a gap Hamiltonian. For this particular choice of L and M, there's many components. So the whole thing is a union of this L and M. You know, it's, we have add them up. It's a union of L and M. And each component is connected. So that's just a, give you, it's a one thing. But the different union of L and M give us this label N. Okay. So therefore, this so here I'm not, I won't be rigorous, but mathematically we say that the union of this space, if I consider pi zero means C zero, the pi zero zero we say it's a Z. It's just a component. But certainly here we take a limit which L go to infinite limit and M go to infinite limit. And you get something. And but certainly, right now, I don't know how to make it rigorous. But I just want to say that physically, it's pretty clear. The harmonic level of field is a different class. So class is labeled by N. But the mathematicians have a fancy way to say that there's some space like this called classifying space, actually. And you can take L go to N go to limit, and actually, the disconnect component is labeled by integer Z. But anyway, so this is a So this is a very complicated mathematical description of this very simple problem. You know why you need to go to doing classifying space once you understand physics like this. But certainly, by going through this very fancy math, you can go to higher dimension. Really, same logic can apply to higher dimension. You can obtain the classification of a gap phase in all dimension in one shot. So that's why we go to this very fancy math. But in zero dimension, it's overkill. But we understand what's going on. Okay. So to prepare for the higher dimension, so I want to just go one step further. We say this actually is a C equal to zero. So this really means that we have another classifying space called a C1. So we have a sequentially classifying space. So over there, we just describe a C0. So what is a C1? OK. C1 is the following. In the C1, we introduce a gamma 1 whose square equal to 1, a sum matrix. And we somehow magically require that our Hamiltonian to be anti-commute with gamma 1. We just assume that. Okay, so then we do the same thing. So this is like constraint. You know, before over there, we just want to classify the Hamiltonian, which have a gap, no other constraint. Now here we do the same thing. We want to classify Hamiltonian with a gap, but with subject another constraint, which this Hamiltonian on that commute with gamma 1. Certainly. We do the same deformation. We say h squared equal to 1. We say the Hamiltonian have eigenvalue plus minus 1 because we can collapse energy. We do the same trick here. So we really classify. So over there, what we do is that we classify Hamiltonian whose h squared equal to 1. Hermitian operator, Hermitian matrix whose square equal to 1. That's what we did over there. That's a C0. Here we do the same thing. We want to classify the Hermitian matrix whose square equal to 1. And the subject is additional constraint. This space is we call the C1. That's it. So what is space of a C1? So the C1 space actually is a. So let's choose gamma 1 equal to identity matrix. If you do this, it's no good because this one have no solution. Okay. So therefore, so the choice gamma 1 is a little defending. We cannot choose this gamma 1 arbitrarily. You have to choose some more non-trivial case that this have a solution. Yes?
You said that H and gamma 1 commute or
anti-commute. Yeah, this is anti-commute. So there's a minus sign here. So gamma 1 is not a symmetry. It's very strange. It's a, you know, if they commute, it can block diagonalize. So the whole thing became same thing. Yeah. But it's anti-commute, the things became very interesting. So this is really the magic. Unacademic is the magic. Okay. So we have to choose the gamma 1 equal to the sigma x cross I. This I is some kind of n by n matrix, some big matrix. Okay. Then choose gamma 1 to be this. And if you choose gamma 1 to be this, then we say, okay, this have a solution. So the Hamiltonian is very simple, can be sigma z cross something like this. I n1 cross n1 minus n2 cross n2. Sigma z can be this. Okay. But this is just one special case. So then you can see that we can obtain the more general Hamiltonian, which is square root of 1 and under commutative gamma 1. Is this under commutative because this sigma s under commutative sigma z and I commutative with any matrix here. That's why they're under commutative. And we can do rotation. And imagine we can, but the rotation we can do is a limited. We can only do the following rotation, minus I, then we got a sigma 0, sorry, cross this B, n by n. And another rotation is minus I, sigma I, cross A is n by n matrix. And there is a similar rotation. It's a Hermitian conjugate on this side. So this is a two unity rotation we can do. You say, why you can only do these two rotations? You cannot do the other rotation. Because these two rotations keep gamma 1 environment. This is the key. If you do this rotation to the gamma 1 do not change because the sigma 0 and the sigma x both commute with the x of the in the gamma 1. So actually, gamma 1 do not change under this rotation. So that's guaranteed that we're using this rotation to deform Hamiltonian. This new Hamiltonian have the same commutation relation with gamma 1, because gamma 1 do not change under this rotation. So therefore, the new Hamiltonian still under commute with gamma 1. If you do some other arbitrary rotation, the new Hamiltonian may not under commute with gamma 1. Okay. So this is our thing. And there's another point I want to say that actually this rotation is quite interesting. This rotation. Okay. And we can use this rotation to we can choose this A to some way to flip sign here, actually. So because of time, I will not go into this. If you think about it, you can use one rotation to flip sign here. This sign can be flipped. So actually, we don't have to consider these two blocks. Since this sign can be flipped under this rotation, so we can just consider the one block. So the whole thing is just I. And by n is fine. Okay, so this is we can consider just that, and also when it's I n by n, then this rotation actually commute through this. So what again we have similar situation. This is space C 1 is naively is u n cross u n. Naively is this. You have two n by n rotation. But however, wonderful rotation don't do anything. So we have to quotient out one rotation, u n. Okay. And that's it. We don't have this component because this L n1, n2 just all collapse into one. So this whole thing, there's no union. And this one is connected. So pi 0 C1 equal to 0. Only one component. There's no other component. Okay. So Then, what is C2? Okay. And C2 is a for the C2, now we have a 2 gamma matrix, gamma 1, which anti-commutative H. And we have a gamma 2, which anti-commutative H. But certainly, it's a gamma 1, gamma 2 also anti-commute. So everything anti-commute. We have this picture. Then how to compact space of a C2? Well, so we can choose gamma 1, gamma 2 to be the following. So here, let me just so gamma 1 is a sigma x cross I, and gamma 2 is a sigma y cross I. And then this H is became sigma z cross I. And so certainly the sigma z with anti-commute is both x and y. And x, y anti-commute with each other, so everything's fine. But then we can do this rotation of the rotation is a sigma zero cross this n by n matrix, and sigma zero cross the dagger of n by n matrix. Okay. Here we only have a. I'm sorry. This is very important. Here we have this n1 by n1 minus n2 by n2. This is important. We have this block. Yeah, this one is a block. Okay, this works. And we only have, here has to be sigma zero, because this matrix, this rotation has to keep both invariant. And we have x and y. So this term has to be commute with both x and y to make this invariant. So this can only be sigma zero. We cannot put a sigma x, sigma y here. Only sigma zero. But the sigma zero don't do anything. You can see the sigma don't do anything. So again, all we have is a n by n rotation act on this block matrix of I and minus I matrix. This is very similar to the C0 case. It's that same as this case. So as a result, that C0 equal to C2. They are periodic. Then you can go on, actually. It turns out that the Cn equal to Cn plus 2. That pi 0 we already discussed is a z. So C0 have a lot of component. But a pi 0 of a C1 equal to 0. So this describes the connectivity for all this classifying space. So for even one, their connectivity is z. For the other one, it's just one component. They ask, why you do this? Well, let's see. Actually, this result directly gave us the result for higher dimension. So how to classify the higher dimensional gapped phase? We can start with, as I mentioned, we can start with a direct point. We can have a gamma I, ki, and sum over k. So here what we do is following. Let's assume we have a Brillouin zone, but we have one direct point. Okay. Then we try to open up the gap here. Then different way to open up the gap for direct point gave us different insulators. We want to classify how many different way to open the gap for the direct point. But for direct point, near direct point, the Hamiltonian is very simple. It's some gamma matrix times ki, where the gamma matrix have this property that they anti-commute. Okay. Then to gap the R point, also very simple, we just add another matrix M, hoping this matrix M would gap it, would make these Dirac nodes into something quadratic. But this is a little tricky. If M is the identity, they will commute with all the gamma. And such identity M only shifts Fermi energy. You know, you already have this. If add M, this Fermi energy from here to here, just shift, you get a pocket. You don't gap it. In order for M to gap a Dirac fermion, it's very important to have a condition where gamma I under commute with M. And that's it. So we have a system of gamma I which under commute with each other. And the mass matrix, which gap Dirac fermion, has to be a matrix under commute with gamma I, all of them. And the eigenvalue of M matrix has to be non-zero so that we have a gap. And so this M is that H we consider over there. Classifying this kind of M is like classifying H over there. So the space for the mass matrix which can gap Dirac fermion is exactly what we calculate the CD in D dimension. That's the space of a mass matrix which can gap Dirac fermion. It's a classifying space we just calculated a moment ago. Then we say that whether this space have a different component or not different component, and et cetera. And that gave you a class of a gapped phase or insulator. And that's it. So it's pretty simple. The first, we have this very weird way overkill for zero dimensions. And then we have this mysterious generalization from HC0 to C1, C2 by using this under-commuting property. And now it's no longer so mysterious because in the Dirac fermion, to gap Dirac fermion, when the mass matrix happen to satisfy those under-commuting property. So therefore, this CD, this abstract mathematical space we studied, actually is correspond to the space of a mass matrix which are capable of gapping Dirac nodes. And once we studied, once we know the topology of the space, then we know how many different way which are not connected, how many not connected way to gap a Dirac fermion. The result is this. for the even dimension, the different way to gap out Dirac fermion is labeled by Z. In odd dimension, they're all connected. So there's no new class in odd dimension. But in every even dimension, we have a Z class. And the Chern insulator we studied a moment ago is an example for two dimension. So next non-trivial example will be the four dimension. So in four dimension, we also have this class of something similar to Chern insulator. At the six dimension, we have et cetera. Yeah. And yes.
Hmm? Does that mean
to be N plus 2 in the box? No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm totally wrong here. N plus 2, yes. Okay. They skip 2, you know.
Yeah.
It's also a type.
And,
M minus M gamma. It's on the right left. The other side, M gamma minus M gamma. And actually,
in the right side?
Yeah, right side.
What?
And promoting with M is M gamma. Just switch one M with a gamma.
Oh, yeah, this would be. This side. Yeah. So this way we obtain a very systematic theory. Okay. And then almost yes, please.
Is this related in any way to like statistics
No. Because this is a one body problem. You can see we have a single body problem. It has nothing to do with the statistics. We just started the band. But the statistic will come when you try to fill the band. You know, the band is trivial, non-trivial. It's has nothing to do with this particle. But if you want to fill the band with a fermion, then we get the insulator. If you don't have a boson, that such band can never become insulator. And so statistics only happen later when you try to fill the band. But when we study the property of band, a property of this matrix, No statistics, just mathematical property matrix. A matrix have a gap, you know, how to classify them. And here I just want to make one last comment is that here we consider the Hermitian matrix. This is a Hermitian matrix. And there is a similar problem associated with the anti-symmetric matrix, real anti-symmetric matrix. So somehow, this real anti-symmetric matrix is more general. And there's another class of a real anti-symmetric matrix. You can do the similar thing for real anti-symmetric matrix. And that kind of theory will become a theory which classify the things like topological insulator or topological superconductor. So there's a whole class for the real anti-symmetric matrix and how to classify the gapped real anti-symmetric matrix. You know, there's a theory. And there, the periodicity is now two. They have similar classifying space. I forgot how do I name them? Click on the D. The periodicity is a 4, 8. So it's much richer. So when you increase dimension, the repeat will go to 8th dimension. Yes?
With respect to Jason's question, the fact that you're somehow requiring that your gamma matrix is anti-commute with the Hamiltonian, isn't that like...
No, not Hamiltonian. This is just matrix. But this is really about this gap in the Dirac nodes. So over there, just mathematics.
True.
The physics is that... we want to classify mass matrix. In order for mass matrix to gap the Dirac point, the mass matrix needs to be anti-commutative with the gamma. So then that became mass matrix. So this is a mathematical requirement. It has nothing to do with statistics. It's really just a single body or a matrix. In order to make a matrix gapped, we need this anti-commute. But this anti-commuting property is not statistic related. Just try to gap the Dirac point. Yeah. Yes?
So how does the non-trivial numbers of the connection, I mean the high function, relate to
churn insulator? No, this is this is very interesting. So remember this pi zero C two equal to Z. So that means in two dimension, there's many. The class of a gapped Hamiltonian is a Z. And this Z directly corresponds to Chern number for the total. This is a total Chern number below the gap. You know, there's a total Chern number, C total. This total Chern number below the gap is correspond to this Z. Yeah. And so this is a thank you for the question. Really, the total Chern number below the gap correspond to this this integer Z, which classify different insulator. Yeah. Other questions? Okay, I think I'm pretty late, so I'll stop here.